Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, folks. Today's guest is a bit of a departure. We're not talking about supplements. We are talking about regenerative medicine. We are talking about feeling better. We talk about longevity, but we also talk a lot about looking better in terms of having better skin and in terms of enjoying a better sex life. So today's guest, you may have figured out by now, is Dr. Amy Killen. She made this incredible leap that we talk about from the emergency room, which is where she practiced medicine for 10 years, and then moving into anti-aging and regenerative medicine. So it's a big leap. It's a fun story, and I think that you'll all enjoy it. What I found really fascinating about Dr. Killen is how she kind of, the way that she looks at it is she's using her patient's desire for better skin and better sexual health as the motivation to get them to be healthier from the inside out. So obviously she's dealing with hormone health and lifestyle, like the whole gamut, all with a view to giving her patients this better skin and better sex health. So she is a great speaker. She's an international speaker. She's a clinical practice owner. She's the medical director of a national regenerative medicine physician training course. So she teaches other people to do what she does. She's an author. And of course, she's a frequent media guest. So lucky me, I got to have her on the podcast. And she is really a very outspoken advocate for empowering people to look and feel their best. And she has the most amazing energy. One of the great places, other than listening to her on podcast, you can really experience that as energy is on Instagram. She's got a great feed. And you can find her on Instagram at Amy B like Bob Killen, and Killen is spelled K like Kansas, I-L-L-E-N like November. And the other way to connect with her is through her website, which is dramykillen.com, and doctor is just D-R, not the whole word doctor. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I found it really refreshing and really fun and really informative. If you are looking to reach out to me, you can reach out to me through my website, which is natnidham.com. I always love to hear from you guys, love to hear your comments and questions. And of course, you can find me on Facebook in the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Group, which I'm actually starting to move over to MeWe, to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Group there, but you can go to either place. You can find me on Instagram as well at natalienidham.com, and that's Natalie with an H, N-A-T-H-A-L-I-E. And of course, if you get value from this podcast, please, please, please share it with your friends, your family, anybody else who you think you would get value from it. And leave us a review, because it's those reviews that help to make this podcast visible and helps me to get more amazing guests for you. So thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you guys. Love hearing from you, and enjoy the episode. And welcome to the podcast, Amy Killen. It is such a pleasure to have you here today. So great to meet you.
Thank you. You as well. I'm a fan.
Well, mutually, I'm a total fan of yours. I mean, I've been listening to podcasts with you forever. I've heard your name, you know, in the space. And then a mutual acquaintance, well, he's an acquaintance of mine. I think he's a good friend of yours. Sean said, hey, do you have any interest in talking to Amy Killen? I'm like, Dr. Killen. And I'm like, are you kidding?
Thank you, Sean Wells.
Yes, he's the man. He's on next week, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So yeah, he's got a new book coming out. So I'm pretty excited to talk to him about that. Anyway, but let's talk about you today. Dr. Killen is a specialist. As I said before, you're a specialist in regenerative and skin and sex, actually, skin is what sex, you said yes. to me at the beginning before we started recording. So I'm going to let you talk to us a little bit about position what you do to the audience, for those who want, for the few out there who may not have heard and or know what to do, what you do, and where you are in the whole nine yards. Tell us about
all right. Yeah, well, thank you. So I live in Salt Lake City, Utah. I also work in Park City. And I say that I do skin and sex. I do kind of integrative and regenerative approaches to optimizing skin and sexual health. And, you know, it's interesting because I was a former emergency room doctor. So I did emergency medicine for about 10 years. That's my background. And then somehow, like 8 years ago or so, I just did this like 180 and ended up doing this integrative and regenerative sexual and skin health. And I ended up here because people kept asking me over and over again, as I got more and more interested in sort of anti-aging and longevity medicine, they would always ask me, okay, that's all great, but what can I do to help my sex life? Or that's really great, but what can I do to help my skin?
Wait, while they're in the ER?
No, no, no. That'd be awesome in the ER. This was after I left the ER, where okay. I was starting to become really interested in just like longevity and integrative medicine and hormones and, you know, like that kind of stuff. And so I was doing some of that. And then people just kept asking me over and over again for help with these two kind of specific areas that seem quite different from each other. But when I started kind of diving in, I realized that a lot of the things that we do in our lives to prevent problems are applicable to both skin and sex. Yeah. And then a lot of the therapies actually are also similar, whether it's regenerative therapies like stem cells and things like that, or sort of lifestyle changes or whatever. So I figured there's actually quite a bit of overlap in these two areas. And so I just decided to kind of dive in and be focused on those areas specifically.
Wow, that's awesome. So that common point, if we think about it, is that basically hormone health and hormone balance? Because that's kind of a place where I can see there's a fulcrum of action that's going to affect, frankly, it affects skin in, for a woman, it affects our skin in the vagina, like in the genital area, but as well, it's going to affect your
I mean, hormones are a big piece. Absolutely. That's one of the things that we can, you know, hormone and optimizing hormones can help both of those. But there's a lot of things, you know, everything from diet, what you're eating, to exercise, to stress, to sleep, you know, all of the sort of lifestyle things you can do. Even things like optimizing and improving nitric oxide can be helpful for skin and for sex. And so there's all these things like that. And then a lot of the actual therapies, whether it's lasers, whether it's regenerative therapies, whether it's, you know, changes in lifestyle, those kinds of things can also apply to both. So sure. You know, certainly there are some differences, but
yes,
I don't treat all of it the same, but there are a lot of similarities. And what I love about it is it's fun because people actually care about their skin and they care about their sex lives. So if I can, you know, get them to lead a healthier life in order to have a better sex life, then that's great. If I can improve their general health because they care about their skin health, then that's a win for everyone.
Yeah, it's almost like the carrot, right?
It is. Yeah, exactly.
Because it's hard sometimes to get people to make those tough decisions around health and lifestyle, nutrition, the whole nine yards. But
yeah,
if what you figure, you know, for those of us who are coaches, we often try to get people to tap into, well, why? Why is this important to you? What are you after? Mm-hmm. And if that thing is, you know, better skin, the aesthetics of how you look, and having a better sex life, which I would say the better sex life is interesting because it's linked to so many other things in terms of mental health, relationship, like connecting to your partner, whoever that may be. I think it goes, I mean, obviously the skin is self-esteem. Right. A lot of our self-esteem is linked to that, but on the sexuality piece, there's so much more embedded there.
There's so much with sexual health and we know that, you know, to me, like having an active sex life and being sexually healthy is one of the best sort of biohacks that you can have. You know, it's improving everything from your mental health and decreasing your risk of anxiety and depression. It's helping you sleep better. It's helping with, you know, all kinds of physical health things like blood pressure, like, you know, risk for cardiovascular disease, even like all cause mortality is at least correlated with people is lower in people who have a more active sex life. We don't know if it's causative necessarily, but they've studied men and they've done these, you know, 10-year studies and found that the ones that are sexually active, you know, sex once or twice a week, those are the people who are living longer than the ones who are not. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But, and of course the social aspect, the relationship aspect, there's just so many connections between sexual health and like all the other sort of major areas of health. And so that to me is so interesting because you can kind of enter in, you know, through sexual health and you can improve, you know, your your emotional health, or you can improve your relationship, or you can improve your even your spiritual health. Like these are all connected, and which is just, I love it.
it's awesome, actually. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the modalities that you use and how they've kind of evolved. Because I know that over the last, I think it's probably the last year or two, you've started to layer some different compounds into your practice that we'll mention in a little while. But where did it all begin? Because, you know, in the world of stem cells, PRP, exosomes, like this is all so fascinating. Where did you start with this?
So I was, after I left the emergency department, I did a couple of years of studying before I left, and eventually I opened my own practice in Portland, Oregon, doing hormones specifically. So just doing bioidentical hormones, you know, kind of really got into that and was interested in that, and eventually started learning about PRP. This was back, you know, 8 years or so ago when PRP was just kind of getting started for skin and sexual health and the O shot and the, you know, P shot and those kinds of things. So I started doing those procedures, and, you know, because I have this emergency room background, I love the procedure stuff. And I was like, oh, give me a needle. This is amazing.
Tell people what PRP is, just in case they don't know.
Yeah, sorry. So PRP is platelet-rich plasma. And it's just basically we take some blood from the patient, we centrifuge it, we spin it, we isolate the platelets. And so you have this big area is concentrated platelets in the serum. And the platelets have all these growth factors in there that are great because they can stimulate, you know, cells and stimulate regeneration when you inject them into different areas of the body. So we can use it, you know, it's been used for everything from improving your knee pain to your skin health. This is a super safe thing because you're not using anyone else's anything. You know, it's just literally part of your blood that's being put
back in. Your own stuff.
Yes. Your own stuff. And so I loved that idea, especially when I was first starting out, because I was like, well, I don't know about how to inject, you know, faces, for instance. I'd never done, you know, I'd sewed up faces, but I hadn't done, like, you know, Botox or filler or things like that. And so I liked the idea of PRP because it's just so safe. Like you cannot do it wrong, almost. Like it's really hard to mess up. So I got interested in that. And just the idea that you could actually sort of use your body to heal itself, to me, was just fascinating. Yeah. And then I ended up, I was doing that for a little while, and I was decided to move to Utah. And Dr. Harry Adelson, who is a pioneer in the stem cell space for musculoskeletal pain, he's here. And I found him online. It's kind of a funny story. So I found him online, and I emailed him just randomly, some little doctor from Oregon. Hi, Harry. I'd love to meet you. I think what you're doing is really cool. Anyway, I offered to take him to lunch or whatever. And he was like, you know, why don't you just come by the office sometime if you're in town and you can see what I do. And so I ended up moving here. I came to the office and I showed up, and it was amazing. The things he was doing with stem cells, I was totally blown away. And so I stayed all day, and then I just kind of kept showing up. I'm not sure if I was invited or not, but I just kept showing up. And eventually he was like, Amy, you're clearly not going away. Why don't you come and join me? Because I was doing different procedures than him at that point anyway. So that's how I got into the stem cell piece, is I just harassed someone else who was already doing it.
Well, you shadowed them, right? I mean, what better way to learn is there than to, and I've heard Dr. Adelson speak a couple of times at the Bulletproof Conference. Mm-hmm. I think the first time I ever really heard about stem cells and regenerative medicine in that sense was a talk he gave at when it was called the Bulletproof Conference, which is going back a few years now.
Exactly. It keeps changing names.
I know. Now it's the upgraded labs. I don't know. Anyway, not that it matters, because apparently conferences are off the table for the short term.
Right.
Hopefully they'll be back soon. I think we all miss them. But yeah, he's quite an interesting cat. So, okay. So that's when you kind of moved from PRP into stem cells. So can we talk a little bit about what's the differences? Like, why would you use one over the other? And then exosomes. Like, I'm really interested in exosomes because I keep getting a little mixed up about what exosomes really are. Are they a part of the stem cell injection, or is it separate? And is this all autologous stuff? Like, are you doing all from the autologous being from the person's own body, or are you sourcing stem cells from somewhere else?
Yeah, so those are good questions. So first of all, the basic stem cells, the stem cells that we use are coming from the patient. So they're they are autologous. We use either bone marrow derived stem cells, which we get from the iliac crest, like the hip, or we use fat derived, which we get usually kind of from like the love handle area in the back. So those are the two general sources of that are pretty easy to get out of a patient. And you know, the reason we get them is the stem cells, and you have stem cells all over your body, obviously, mm-hmm. and they're the cells that are capable of replicating themselves as well as differentiating, meaning they can kind of turn into several different types of tissue depending on what is needed. So that's what a stem cell is. It's those two things. And we have them everywhere. And of course, as you get older, you stop making as many stem cells, you don't have as many, and the ones you have are not as active. So they're there, but they're not sending out as many signals. They're not telling the cells around them to repair as much, which, you know, is obviously why if I were to cut my arm, it would take me 3 times longer to heal than my 11-year-old son, who somehow heals all of his injuries in like 24 hours and is back on his bike again. I have no idea how, but that's stem cells. Like, you know, I'm older than him. So what the idea behind stem cell therapy is to take stem cells from one part of your body or another source, but one part of your body and move them to where you actually want them to be concentrated. So for me, for instance, I use them a lot with skin rejuvenation. I use them for hair restoration, and I use them for sexual optimization, but they can be used for anything. When you move the stem cells, for instance, from your fat into your skin, those stem cells are not actually changing into skin stem cells. They're not going to stay in your skin. So that's one kind of myth of stem cells. Mm-hmm. What they're actually doing is they're sending out signals to the cells that are already there, that are already in my skin, like the fibroblasts, you know, other cells like that. And it tells those cells to become more active, to increase collagen production, to increase elastin, hyaluronic acid, all the things like that. And the way that it does that, the way those stem cells do that, is they release these little pockets of information called exosomes.
Okay.
So this is kind of your second question.
Yeah.
So the exosomes are released by stem cells, whether those stem cells come from you or somewhere else. And they're just these little tiny pockets. They don't have any DNA in there. They tend to have things like growth factors and cytokines, as well as messenger RNA or microRNA. So they have the blueprints to create proteins, mm-hmm. but they don't have actual DNA, which is one thing that's kind of cool about exosomes. So these exosomes, they float around from the stem cell, and they eventually get taken up by the cells that you already had in your skin. They okay. get like literally like taken engulfed. The cell engulfs the exosome. And then the exosome is actually able to reprogram how that cell behaves, and essentially is like, because it's like got these little messenger RNA and microRNA. So it can tell the cell, hey, we actually need to be making more of this protein, or we need to be making more of this, you know, this growth factor. And so that's why exosomes are so cool, is because you can take exosomes from, for instance, a umbilical cord stem cell, which is a more active, like, you know, like more youthful stem cell. You can use that and get that really sort of robust regenerative signaling without having to get someone else's DNA. So that's how those are used as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes huge sense. Sometimes you're just doing an exosome shot though, right? You don't always have to be using like, so the exosome is essentially, it's a chemical messenger. It's mm-hmm. it's a messenger coming from the stem cell. So right. when we talk about people just using exosomes, are they also using stem cells at the same time? Or is there a way to isolate the exosomes from the stem cells and then just be using exosomes?
You can just use exosomes. And so with exosomes, you get from a lab, and you want to make sure, you know, obviously as a consumer, you may not know all the labs, but you want to make sure it's a good lab, because there is the potential to get, you know, viruses and things like that in exosomes if they weren't screened properly. Sorry. That's okay. But in general, these, you know, the labs that we use are very safe, and you get them from a lab and they're frozen in a little vial, and you essentially just defrost them. You can add a little PRP to them if you want, or even some saline, and you can use those exosomes alone, or a lot of times, like I do a lot of big procedures and big cases with Dr. Adelson, and we will do some stem cells and exosomes combined, stem cells from the patient, exosomes from this lab that we use. So you can do all different things. And, you know, honestly, we don't really know the best way to do it, I don't think, at this mm-hmm. time. There are studies that show that stem cells are good for this, this, and this. There are studies that, you know, some studies at exosomes. Exosomes are pretty early. Like we've only been using them for a few years. And that studies in exosomes are limited at this time, but they're pretty exciting. They seem to be comparable to stem cells, at least in a lot of areas. But there's no head-to-head comparison. Like, they're
right.
stem cells versus exosomes versus PRP with exosomes versus, you know, we just don't know for sure. So it's a lot of it's kind of, we know it's all generally safe, or it seems to be, and we're still kind of gathering data on what's the best approach.
Right. Well, I would imagine for different things, you're going to find that there's different combinations of all of the above that are going to give you the best. Like, I mean, I almost got into the world of stem cells a few years ago when I was contacted by a company to represent them here in Canada. And I never ended up doing anything with it because the regulations here around stem cells are very fuzzy.
Yeah.
And I think they're fuzzy in the US too. I mean, periodically you've got regulatory boards getting all up and on. But fortunately these days they seem to be distracted with bigger issues. So, you know, it's moved their attention away from, you know, what's I've seen driving a lot of practitioners, frankly, to places like Mexico and Costa Rica, where they feel that they can practice this kind of medicine much more freely. And, you know, I know one person in particular who I've met who's, you know, he was in a catastrophic car accident. And the reason why he's walking and talking and moving the way he is today is because his family had the means to send him to Mexico to one of these clinics. And they literally rebuilt the guy. He has more foreign DNA in his body than he has his own at this point.
It's pretty, and fortunately in the United States, one thing we can't do is we can't culture expand stem cells and then put them back in. So that's something that they can do, you know, for instance, you know, in these other, in Panama and places like that, which would be great. Cause if I could take my own stem cells or someone else's, even umbilical cord stem cells, and I could grow them in, you know, Petri dishes, and I could multiply them multiple times over and then put them back in, you know, you just kind of get more bang for your buck, but that's not allowed here in the United States. Yeah. Currently.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So then what was I just going to ask you? I had another question. Okay. Doesn't matter what that question was. There's so many more behind that one. So then let's talk a little bit about, we're going to save the sexual function part for dessert. So let's talk about skin rejuvenation, anti-aging, that whole piece. And, you know, it was interesting when we were talking before we started recording, how And this is becoming a recurrent, well, it is a recurring theme among all the practitioners I speak to, whether they're in your space or they're in the pure peptide space. At the end of the day, if you haven't addressed the foundation of the individual, and this is what you're referring to also at the beginning, none of these strategies are really going to be as effective as if you did it. And by that, we're talking about, and so I'm going to just throw a few things out there because I'm sure, you know, wondering how much of this you talk to your clients about being inflammation, metabolic health. You know, are you running around with blood sugar hovering around 20 all day, or which causes all these bigger problems? Like, do you basically work with your patients to help them to normalize things before you go in and do any of these procedures?
Yeah. Right now, I mean, yes, absolutely. Those are all very important. I think that whether I'm the one working with them or whether I have someone else working with them, which right now that's usually the case because I'm not taking on sort of long-term clients, but that foundational health is so important. And I, you know, I have a lot of patients that I just won't, or a lot of people that I won't take on as patients for instance, for stem cell procedures, because if you don't have the foundational health, if your blood sugar is high, if you're smoking, if you're abusing alcohol, if you're taking too many opiates, you know, there are all these things that, that people are doing, unfortunately, that are going to make my procedure not work. And that makes me look bad. And it also makes them unhappy. And
and I then don't they want come back and they say it didn't work.
Exactly. The last thing I want is for them to spend money on something and then not work, and for them to be, you know, feel bad about that and angry about that. So getting that foundational stuff is hugely important. And, you know, and honestly, you're going to make bigger strides in improving skin health, sexual health, everything really by mastering the foundational components, I think, than you will with any of the high-tech stuff we have out there right now. Now, the high-tech stuff is cool and it's great as sort of a next level health, right? Like it's a great sort of bump up the optimization part, but it's nothing without the foundation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Actually, I know what I was going to ask you before. Does the age of the person, like what happens when you get people coming into your office who are in their 70s or 80s? Are their stem cells and exosomes still going to be worthwhile. Like I remember back, you know, this other company I kind of worked with, who I don't even actually think they lasted. I think they got into some kind of trouble with contamination of something at some point. So I kind of dodged a bullet there. But they used to talk about how in older populations, and now we're talking about people in their 70s and their 80s, where their autologous stem cells were not going to really be, like it wasn't worth harvesting their own. Mm-hmm. Because this, as you were saying earlier, like those cells are less active, they're more fatigued, they've been impacted by an environment, whatever this person's dealt with in their whole life. What are your yeah. thoughts on that?
Yeah, we find, and then that's actually where exosomes, because the exosomes we get, remember, are from umbilical cords, you know, from perinatal sources. So they're from, they're youthful exosomes. And so that's where we found exosomes to be really helpful is they're great for anyone, but especially in that person who's over, you know, 65 or so. We'll still use their stem cells in some cases, it depends on kind of what's going on, but supplementing with exosomes seems to really help those stem cells to be able to function better, or maybe it's just the exosomes are functioning better, but essentially that helps a lot.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. So let's talk about the facial rejuvenation step to start. Hey. Yay. So what are the kinds of things you're able to do with the exosomes and the stem cells and the PRP? And then I guess from there, I know that you've gotten into using peptides. At what point have you brought them in? Where are you finding them to be helpful? And even also, you know, what age do you think people should be starting to think about this stuff?
The earlier, the better, as far as at least thinking about it. You know, you don't have to do anything about it, but you know, I get a lot of people in their 20s who will, you know, DM me on Instagram and are like, what should I be doing right now? And, you know, that point, honestly, you should wear some sunblock and, you know, watch the sun damage, watch the stress, like things like that. But I don't think you have to go crazy. But so the regenerative things like the PRP, the exosomes, the stem cells, for all of those, I can do a few things. I can use them after like a laser or something to help with healing faster. When that's one way that I'll use it, I'll do like a, you know, a non-ablative laser or something like that, where we're trying to kind of tighten the skin. And then I will either microneedle on top of the skin and then apply the stem cells or exosomes topically. The microneedling creates these little channels that essentially allows whatever I put topically on to kind of penetrate down into the dermis of the skin. So it's this kind of trick way to get, you know, those things into the dermis, because a lot of these are too big. The stem cells, for instance, are too big to get through the skin itself if you don't have little channels. Although exosomes actually can get through the skin when applied topically, which is interesting. They take some time. It's like 18 hours or so to kind of wiggle through the skin, but they're small, so they can actually get through there, which is interesting. But anyway, so I can inject
18
those
hours of not touching your face. Not
yeah, I know. What are we doing? I can microneedle with them, or I can just inject them, you know, into the skin directly, which is what I'll do a lot of times in the areas where there's thinning skin, you know, under the eyes, around the mouth and lips and places like that, where we all tend to get thinning skin as we get older. I'll do little injections in there, either into just the dermis or even deeper into that sub-Q area. And you know, what you're going to see again is kind of promotion of collagen and elastin and hyaluronic acid, which are all the components of skin that as we get older, and by older, I really mean like past like 25, that's when your peak production is.
Wow.
25 is when we peak.
Oh God.
Collagen wise, at least. And then after that, it's all downhill. But
oh my God, I must be at the bottom of the hill at this point. I'm heading.
But we're trying to increase the production of those things. So, you know, we tend to see the skin just has, well, you know, you'll get this sort of radiance of the skin. You'll get this glow. It can help with tightening and fine lines. It can help with scarring, like acne scarring and things like that. Especially with the microneedling, hyperpigmentation, like sunspots can also be helped with these kinds of things. Rosacea or kind of inflamed skin, because we know that exosomes and stem cells and PRP are very anti-inflammatory. So if you have some kind of, you know, skin inflammation going on, sometimes just applying these things to it can be great. Or even wounds, if you have, you know, open wounds. Mm-hmm. I don't deal with wounds a lot, but there's so much research in wounds using these therapies. So, you know, these are kind of great maintenance things to do, you know, occasionally, maybe once a year or once every 2 years, or, you know, as often as possible, to just kind of help continue to get your skin to do what it used to do on its own, but is not doing as much now as it used to.
Right. And so is it ever too late to start stuff like that?
No, I don't think so. You know, certainly, we're talking earlier about this, you know, as you get older, a lot of things happen with your skin. There's the lack of collagen and you know, hyaluronic acid and all of that. But you also lose structure underneath the skin. So as we get older, we start to lose like the fat in our cheeks, for instance, starts to migrate out down to like our jowls, or it just goes away. So, you know, we lose fat like around our eyes and our cheeks. And this is why people who are thinner as they get older start to look kind of hollowed out a little bit. And that's a loss of fat. It's not that your skin is necessarily a problem. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's one of the limitations and the things that I do is there, these things are not necessarily restoring the fat. People still might want to do fillers or, you know, later a facelift or some kind of surgery, to get some of that shape back, but we can keep the skin in really good health. And that goes a long way to keeping people looking, you know, healthy and vibrant as they're getting older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, okay. So then let's move on to peptides. So when did you bring peptides into the picture and where do they fit in?
So pretty recently, I've been reading about peptides for the last year or so, but I've just kind of been like dipping my toes in the water. You know, I'll get them for myself and my husband and like a few friends. And I'm like, you know, tell me what happens. but it's only been pretty recently that I've actually been offering them to patients to use. And usually what I'll do is have them, because I'm again, mostly seeing patients who are coming in for procedures at this point, and I'll have them use peptides afterwards. Although certainly they could do it before as well. So, you know, I'll have them either do... There's tons of creams and serums and things out there, of course, in the skincare world that have been using peptides topically for a long time. Like a lot of
different kinds, I think, because the ones we're talking about for the most part, I mean, GHK, which is the big skin peptide, proper peptide does cross the dermal layer, but it needs help. Right.
Yeah. But yeah, GHK copper is in a lot of the skin ointments and creams and serums and has been, you know, for a long time. But I think that it's getting more attention in the last, at least in my attention, at least in the last couple of years as being something that, you know, you can inject it and just do sub Q injections, which I did for a little while, or you can also apply it topically. And so that's an easy one because you can get it easily. You know, one of the other ones, even something like BPC-157, which we use for, you know, like for healing musculoskeletal injuries and things like that, can actually be really great for skin as well. And that's an injectable one also that I've used. Those are the kind of the main ones. You know, if people have inflammation and they're working on that, or they have immune system problems or, you know, other things going on, then I might be, you know, experiment with some of the other ones like the zinc, thymulin, or, you know, some of the things like that.
But
other than that, I haven't used a ton of injectable peptides for skin.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, we definitely, one of the things I hear about, because I've been lost in the peptide wormhole now for rabbit hole for years. One of the big tragedies of my life is that I don't tolerate this particular class of peptides, but the growth hormone secretagogues.
Oh yes. That's true. Yeah,
like that's one of the big feedbacks I get from people on growth hormone secretagogues is that their people's skin, it just goes up regardless of where they're at, it goes up a level.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when you get men saying it, you don't think of men really caring about their skin that much, but I've got all these guys in my community going, they'll after about a month or 6 weeks or so, they'll like, and my skin looks amazing. Like, when's the last time you saw a guy looking in the mirror going, how does my skin look?
Look at my skin. Yeah. One of the big ones that you, like, I've personally used like CJC 1295 and Ipramorelin.
Yeah.
I used Sermorelin years ago, but I didn't really find that super helpful. But what are the big ones that you find people are loving for their skin?
On the growth hormone secretagogue side, the CJC 1295, which is the mod GRF 1-29, in conjunction with Ipramorelin. So they're two different peptides.
Right.
Those two together, just, you know, it's funny, but it kind of takes that whole nut of growth hormone supplementation, which is problematic in a million different ways. A, because it's illegal. B, because it's hard to manage. C, because growth hormone will shut down your own endogenous production of growth hormone, which is another big fat problem.
And it's expensive.
Yeah, and it's a kajillion dollars. Whereas this peptide, which frankly is very inexpensive, and you use itty bitty amounts, and it improves sleep, and it upregulates your own production of growth hormone. I would say that one is almost one of the biggest game changers and most noticeable peptides. The BPC-157 absolutely is, I call it the Model T Ford of peptides, because it does everything. It touches, you know, it even helps with gut health, and gut health is going to help your skin, right?
Right.
Like, all of it. Right. And, you know, interestingly enough, when we get to the sexual health part, before my body decided it didn't like CJC and Ipamorelin, I used it for, I want to say 4 to 6 weeks. And I would say that I noticed that it made a difference for me. It, like, not like an O shot might have or anything, but definitely made a difference for me as a, you know, post-menopausal woman.
Yeah.
Which was one of those things I would sit there and go, who can I ask about this?
Well, it makes sense. I mean, we know that, you know, growth hormone, it does all kinds of things that are positive. It, you know, improves blood flow. And actually, there's studies in actual growth hormone that have shown is one of the few things that can essentially reverse atherosclerosis.
Yeah.
You know, so if you think about blood flow to, like, the genitals, and atherosclerosis being one of the main causes of lack of blood flow in men and women, if you can partially reverse that by, you know, by using something that increases your growth hormone, then you may see some pretty big benefits.
Yeah. No, it makes total sense. And then the GHKCU, the copper peptide, is another one that I think is, I mean, you know, I think we are only scratching the surface on what that peptide does, because it acts on your DNA. And there was a study out of Stanford that talked about how it upregulates or downregulates in a positive way over 1,000 genes in the human body. And of those genes, we have collagen production. We have kind of like the way that the body heals scarring even. So there's just so many different things that it does. I don't know that anybody really has a full handle on everything, but I would definitely put those three at the top, assuming that there's no major, like you said, I mean, if you have inflammation, there's different peptides for that, but.
Right. Yeah. I was doing all of those things actually for a little while. I even built myself this awesome little peptide box out of wood that I could pre-fill all of my syringes for, like, you know, a week or two, and then have them I had floral stuff in there. I could line them all up. It was so amazing. And then I did it for a few months, and then somehow I forgot to do it. So I got to get back into it. Now I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to get back to your stuff, which is also just as cool. But I think that one of the secrets of peptides is to work in cycles, right? It's like anything else. Like, you want to do cycles, because I believe that the body responds better to pulses of stimulus than it will to this, like, constant noise kind of thing.
I think that's true. I think that's true with whether that's your diet or your exercise program or, you know, really anything. I think that it's good. Flexibility is key.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's like that whole metabolic flexibility thing, which we won't get into because that's a whole other place, which we could go to, but we're not going to. Okay. So moving down the body, moving into this whole sexual health area. So who do you work with more here? Is it men or women or both?
It's both. I would say it's probably like 55% men and 45% women, but it's pretty even.
Interesting. Okay. And so what's the age do you find people are starting to come to you at? Like, let's talk about men. Like, is this like an andropause thing, or does it happen before that? Like,
yeah. You know, I get a lot of sort of biohackery kind of people who are referred by Dave Asprey or Ben Greenfield, or, you know, former patients of ours, and who come to us for not so much because they're having problems, but just because they're trying to, like, get ahead of problems.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those people could be 35 years old and totally healthy and, you know, endurance athletes, and there's nothing wrong. And we'll still do, you know, sexual injections, penis injections, or, you know, for women, the O-shot injections, because they are still like, I want to have things get better. And a lot of times I'll get the feedback I'll get from them later is, you know, I didn't think that I was having any issues, but it turns out that things are actually better. Like, I feel like I'm 18 years old now versus, you know, 35. But then I also get a lot of men over 40, over 45, who have started to have some sort of andropause kind of changes. They've got, you know, testosterone has gone down and maybe they're getting replaced on that, but they're starting to have a little bit of erectile dysfunction. Or for women, you know, either they're perimenopausal or postmenopausal and are starting to have some either some sexual dysfunction or just like they're just not enjoying things as much as they used to. And will come to me for that reason. I don't like for women, for instance, if someone has like a serious problem, like they need to go see an OBGYN doctor. If it's surgical, they should have the surgery. Like I'm not trying to fix things that are sort of broken as far as structural problems,
right?
But it's more about age-related, just, you know, degeneration, age-related changes, and trying to get those kind of back to where they used to be.
So for women and, well, and men, I guess also, like, do you do these procedures for women, even if they're not on hormone replacement therapy, or do you feel that they need to do both? Because, you know, it's interesting now. I'm starting to come, like, I'm a huge proponent of BHRT myself.
Yeah, me too.
But at the same time, you'll come across people and medical practitioners who are very against hormone replacement for lots of good reasons, sometimes not such good, for whatever reason, right? Yeah. So then are these procedures still helpful for those people, even in the absence of hormone optimization?
Yeah, I think they definitely can be. I think they can be a good answer into some, you know, the few people that, like for women, for instance, who are not doing hormones because they have a breast cancer history and, you know, or something like that. And they're not doing it for that reason. And that they want to have something that can be helpful. I think these procedures can help. But I totally agree with you. I do think that bioidentical hormones are really great. And the few times I'm just thinking back to some of the, you know, a couple of patients that I've had feedback on, for instance, women who I've done the O shot with, and they, you know, have gotten feedback later and they're like, well, I'm still not having vaginal lubrication, or I'm still not having, you know, I'm still noticing vaginal laxity, or, you know, this or this. And I've always told them going in, those problems are going to really be helped by also considering, to, you know, doing estrogen, whether that's vaginal estrogen or systemic estrogen. Like that's something that you and your doctor can talk about. But the health of the vagina is like loves estrogen, and you know, when it's gone, it does really start to, it changes the way that it functions and the way that it behaves, and so estrogen is really important for that. And so the things I can do can help, but you know, also estrogen,
right, and estrogen.
Testosterone and DHEA, and, you know, all the things. Like it's not just one. It's a whole series. There's actually a really interesting study that you would actually, I think, like, that it was in mice where they did stem cell injections into just like the, almost like an O shot for mice. They did like vaginal, just external kind of vulva.
Little teeny tiny mice. Like how?
Teeny bitty. Oh yeah. Like microscopes out. Oh, I don't know how. But they did these injections, kind of, you know, like vaginal, like vulvar kind of vaginal injections. And then they just did some later on, they followed the mice. These are postmenopausal mice. Okay.
Okay.
Postmenopausal mice. And they followed the mice. And what they found is that compared to the control group, those mice actually started making estrogen again. And they essentially, in the mice, they essentially reversed menopause, at least for a period of time, not by injecting the ovaries, just by injecting the vagina itself. It probably doesn't apply to everyone. So don't quote me, but it's kind of interesting because we know that stem cells can be really regenerative, and we know they don't stay where you put them. They, you know, they essentially stay there for a little while and they move in somewhere else in your body. So, you know, it's interesting as a way to, at least in mice, reverse menopause.
Give them a happier sex life.
I know. Oh, they were very happy.
Well, no kidding, you know, and it almost makes up for the misery of being a lab mouse. They're the lucky lab mice, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on to, where do you find it's easier? Like, do you find it's easy? And I have my biases on this as well. Do you find men easier to treat than women, or vice versa? Or do you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
I find men easier. I think whether that's with hormone replacement or with, you know, the the P shot is a super easy procedure. Like there's, I just feel like men in general are a little easier. Women are just so complex, and I love them. I am one, but there's so much more involved with sex, for instance. Like I feel like with men, if I can get their penis to work for them, like if I can get blood flow going in and staying there, I can do that by a number of different mechanisms. Then they're pretty happy. Like they're like, all right, cool, I got it.
But
with women, it's not a blood flow issue, you know, a lot of the times. Like this is why Viagra doesn't work for women as well as it does for men, because it's not necessarily a blood flow issue. It's, you know, it's a what's going on in my head issue. It's, you know, what's my to-do list look like? It's, did you do the dishes this morning? It's, you know, there's like all of these, it's how does my body look to me today? Like, you know, there's all this other stuff that we have to deal with. And so I feel like we're just a lot more difficult.
We're more complex.
We're more complex. We are. We're very complex creatures.
Okay. So now there is another peptide we didn't talk about, but that moves into this area, which is, and it's actually now an FDA approved drug. It's one of the few.
It is. Yes.
And it goes, and I don't know you probably know the name of the FDA drug. It's PT-141, which is an offshoot of melanotan, which is melanotan 2 being, the tanning peptide, the Barbie peptide, which interestingly enough, actually also has very beneficial effects for skin.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it helps to thicken the skin and reduce wrinkles and the whole nine yards, but let's not get into that. So talk to me about PT-141. Are you using that with your clients now? Because that is one of its big hallmarks is that it does seem to help women.
Yes.
It works at a brain level versus a Viagra that's just addressing, you know, the plumbing, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. So the trade name is Vileesi, Vileesi. Bremelanotide is the sort of generic name for that. And, but I have a compounding pharmacy and oftentimes we'll just give it as PT-141. I've used it for both men and women. And I think it can work really well. I've had some great feedback from both sexes and in terms of just really increasing interest in sex as well as actual sort of erectile function or, you know, in women as well. So I think I'm still kind of new at it. The only feedback I've gotten that it was negative is that it can take sort of a variable time to onset. Mm-hmm. And so for some people it's like 30 minutes, some people it's like several hours. And then there's this like 6 hour window where it's like, active. And I, you know, I tell my patients like, just set aside like 6 hours and then just be ready. Be ready to go.
Oh, the weekend.
Exactly. Like you don't want to get caught. I've had patients who were like, well, it worked really well. But at like 3 a.m., my girlfriend was waking me up from, you know, from the middle of the night telling me she wanted to have sex because like it all of a sudden just hit at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess it's good and bad, but that's the feedback I've gotten.
So that's interesting because there's another, actually I'll just give you this feedback. There's another, if you will, derivative of that melanotan family of peptides called setmelanotide, which is more used for weight loss because it suppresses appetite. So that melanotan family, melanotan does a lot. It hits a lot of different marks, right? It stimulates melanin. It suppresses hunger. But it can make people nauseous as well. And I don't know if you found that with PT-141 at all. That
a little bit, yeah.
People get really green from it. Anyway, but the setmelanotide really focuses more on the appetite suppression, increase in metabolic rate. Like, so it helps to upregulate fat burning and or caloric expenditure. But it also will result in, it'll also give you the sexual uptick. Interesting.
Okay.
But I will tell you that what happens with that is it builds over time. So I wonder if with PT-141, if you had people using it at a smaller dose and just increasing the dose, but have them use it more, like instead of just on an occasion, maybe build up a little bit so that it kind of like a ramp up period.
Yeah, literally.
And also you also build a tolerance to it so that you're less likely to feel green from it.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good idea. Yeah. We know that with like Viagra or Cialis or those kinds of things, same thing kind of applies. You can actually just use it, you know, every day and still get benefit versus like using like this big dose that causes you to get headaches and nausea. Yeah, that's interesting. I just looked up setmelanotide and apparently it just got FDA approval. Did you know that?
No, I had no idea.
I didn't know that either. And I just looked it up, and because I was like, well, I've never heard of that. I'm not
it's
even
a pretty
sure.
Pretty cool peptide.
That's awesome.
And
all right.
It has a very nice safety profile. They did a clinical study with it. I'm not surprised it got FDA approval, actually. They did a very large clinical study with it. And they had people, now these were people who were obese, so they had quite a lot of weight to lose. Mm-hmm. And it was a year, that study. So they had them use it for a full year, and the subjects lost about a pound a week without action. So now they said without making any lifestyle or dietary changes.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be hard to imagine that someone who's obese starts to lose weight. They might start to move more. They might start to make better.
Sure.
You know, yeah. Also there's this whole appetite suppression thing. So they maybe eat a little bit less. And so you can imagine that the effects would snowball over the course of the year.
Yeah.
But it has a really nice safety profile as well. So
that's awesome. It's called Imcivree.
He gives them these crazy names.
I don't know what this name is.
What is that?
We'll just call it setmelanotide. I think that's better.
Setmelanotide is actually way easier. Okay. So now let's get into the next area that you do. So this is, so the O shot, the P shot, these are actual injections of PRP or stem cells or exosomes into the actual genital organs to help rejuvenate and restore function, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The sort of traditional O shot and P shot was just PRP. And then, you know, when I started doing it with stem cells, you know, I've called it like various things, but stem cell O shot, stem cell P shot, exosome O shot, P shot. But yes, exactly. You're injecting with men, injecting directly into the corpus cavernosum, which are the two tubes that kind of fill with blood when you have an erection, as well as sort of closer to the tip of the penis at the glands. And then with women, I'm injecting directly into the clitoris, as well as the anterior vaginal wall, kind of in the G spot, the mythical G spot area.
Yeah.
It is, so we're injecting into that area. And with women, it can also help with like stress urinary incontinence, you know, when you mm-hmm. kind of leak a little urine when you sneeze or cough or jump, because we're injecting kind of right underneath the urethra. And so you can kind of build that tissue up a little bit and help support the urethra. But yeah, so that's how it works. And we use numbing cream. So these are not, it sounds awful, but
well,
it's actually.
You can see people just crossing.
I know.
Right now.
Whenever I speak at like events and I talk about this, the whole crowd is like, takes like a breath and they're just like, ah, but yeah, no, we use numbing cream. It's not that bad. It's fine.
it's just a thing. It's all, you'll be fine. Okay.
Be fine.
All right. So now we're moving into, so now there's the whole shockwave area, right? Shockwave mm-hmm. therapy. And so I first heard about this, I think like everybody else in the free world from Ben Greenfield talking, I think it was like 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. I don't know. He met the Gainswave guy in Florida. And so you're doing that work as well. And so do you find that you have to layer these things on top of each other kind of thing? Like you have to do the P shot, the O shot, then you do the shock therapy, or can you do just the shock therapy for people? Like how do you decide what to do for who?
I like them together better than separate. And there's been studies that a few small ones looking at, like for instance, stem cell injections plus shockwave therapy tend to work better than either one alone right. in the penis. But there's actually a lot of studies in men, not any in women, but a lot in men that have shown that this low intensity extracorporeal shockwave therapy, as it's known, is beneficial just by itself if you do enough sessions. So you have to do generally at least about 6 sessions
yeah.
spread out over about 3 weeks. So it's usually like 2 sessions a week. Each session is maybe 30 minutes. This is the ones, you know, in the doctor's office, although there are home devices now as well. But, you know, those 6 sessions have been proven to be useful in helping with erectile dysfunction as well as like Peyronie's disease, which is a scarring disease of the penis. It's very common and debilitating in some cases. So there's no real evidence that it works in women. However, because the anatomy is similar in a lot of ways, we use it in women as well. And it seems to be helpful for women too.
Okay. So what's it actually doing?
You know, it works in a little bit similar way to PRP. So the sound waves, these are high intensity sound waves that are essentially penetrating into the tissue, and they are signaling the body that there's been some kind of micro trauma, even if it's mild.
Yeah.
And so it's stimulating VEGF, which is going to increase blood vessel formation and blood flow over time. It's stimulating stem cell recruitment to the area because it thinks it's been injured, even though it really hasn't. It's stimulating nitric oxide release, which is really important for sex because nitric oxide, of course, is the chemical messenger that is telling the blood vessels to open up and let the blood come in.
Yeah.
So it works in a similar way to PRP or even stem cells in some cases. But it's creating a micro trauma. It's not really a real trauma, and your body then repairs itself.
Uh-huh. Interesting. I'm just thinking out loud here, and maybe you've already thought of this, but I wonder if stacking BPC-157 on top of that, which is also angiogenic, also promotes angiogenesis and repair and all the other good stuff that it does. You wonder if there'd be any compound.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a great idea because I like to give people multiple tools because, I find that obviously it's going to work better if you've done several things that work together versus just one thing. And so it's more of a sort of a kitchen sink approach, to doing that. So I'll send people home with a penis pump or for women, like something like a VFit Plus, which is a red light therapy, intravaginal red light therapy. I'll send them home with prescriptions for peptides if they want them. I'll send them home I like to have several different things because everyone responds to therapies differently. And So if you do several things at once, then generally you'll have some kind of good response.
Yeah, no. And they can build on each other. It's that whole idea of stacking, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I like that. I'll have to add in or think about adding in BPC-157.
Do a little study. Little mini study. Okay. Well, this is, So you were talking about home devices.
Yeah.
For the shockwave. So do they work? Can they replace do you think they can replace the doctor's visit? So this doesn't take care of the PRP or any of that stuff, but just in terms of the shockwave, are they as strong or is it just that you just then need to use it longer to get the same benefit? What's been your experience with those?
I don't think we know for sure. There's the new home device is called the Phoenix. They have a Phoenix Pro also, which is a little bit stronger and used and is sold in doctor's offices that just came out. But the Phoenix, it's not as strong, it's not going to go quite, you can't crank it up as much as you can in the doctor's office. We can go to a much higher setting. Mm-hmm. But from what I understand, the technology is similar to the machines in the doctor's office. So I think certainly if you have pretty mild symptoms, then doing something at home and just being patient with you can do two or three sessions a week at home. Yeah. You could certainly see results. But I think if it's, I always encourage people to at least go to a doctor who knows about this kind of stuff, because it's always more than just you need shockwave therapy. It's usually also your testosterone isn't very good. And also you have too much abdominal fat and you're eating too much sugar. And because you're not exercising, you don't have enough nitric oxide. And what if we added some sunlight? There's always sort of other things to consider. Mm-hmm. And because, especially in men, we know that erectile dysfunction is an early warning sign for cardiac, for sort of atherosclerosis and cardiovascular disease in general. And so even if we repair the penis, if you haven't taken care of the problem, then you're still on the road to potentially having a heart attack or a stroke or something else that's, affected by the cardiovascular system. So I think that you can probably do it at home, at least to start, but I encourage people to not start that way.
Yeah. Maybe as a follow-up kind of measure in between.
Exactly.
It's a little bit like if you were going to do this game, that your shockwave therapy a couple of times a year.
Yes.
In between for maintenance, you might use your home device.
That's what I would recommend. I would recommend doing an in-office treatment with Gainswave, exactly once or twice a year. And then having a device at home that you could do for maintenance in between. That's ideal, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, there was one last thing I was going to ask you about was how you test hormones, because I'm finding that, there's these big brawls.
Oh my gosh, so many.
Right? Do you find that?
Yes.
It's this is the best way. No, this is the best way. So there's blood serum testing, which I actually work in collaboration with a medical practitioner in the US, and he swears by blood serum. He's don't talk to me about the Dutch unless there's some reason to go down that road.
Right.
And then there's dried urinary testing, which is the Dutch. Mm-hmm. And then we, so blood serum and saliva.
Saliva.
So
yeah.
you use blood serum. That's your jam. So tell us about why you picked that one, and do you ever use the others?
So when I first started out doing hormones, I did exclusively saliva and urine at that time, because I had been taught through some of the you know, educational courses that I went to that the hormones are going to show up better in these other you're like, the blood is not going to show you the tissue levels, it's only showing you the blood levels, and you're not getting education and all of this. And maybe it's different now. This was, again, 7 or 8 years ago. But what I found was that the labs that were doing the saliva and the urine testing, they kept changing their reference ranges. Like, they kept changing their optimal ranges, So I would get these lab results back, and it would show me that the patient is in the optimal range, 1 week. And then I test her again 3 months later, and this range has moved. Yeah. And all of a sudden she's not in the optimal range. And I was like, what is going on here? And I also found that with replacement of hormones, especially with estrogen, for instance, that the dose, like, I was putting patients on these very tiny doses, and they were, the lab was saying that they were optimal on those tiny doses, but they weren't feeling optimal. The women were not feeling, they were still having hot flashes. They were still having foggy brain.
Right.
And so I went and kind of dove into the literature a little bit more. The reason I use blood serum now is a few things. Number one, it's covered by insurance for the most part, which is nice. But also, most of the big studies that have been done in major publications are on serum levels. So whether that's estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, I know the exact level of blood serum level that I want your progesterone to be protective against uterine cancer, because that's been studied and it's been published in like a major journal. I know how much estrogen, I know these levels because they've been published, and I know that the lab reference ranges, although those sometimes change as well, don't change as much as the other ones. So I kind of agree with doing, I think the Dutch test is a great test if you're really looking to specifically look at estrogen pathways, and that, if you have like crazy estrogen levels and you're having symptoms and we can't get control of it and you need to go like down that rabbit hole, I think it's great. But for most people, I think the blood levels are just fine.
Okay. That's interesting. Wow. Well, because we know that even the labs, even blood labs, like their optimal ranges move around because. And I mean, I learned this not that long ago in a course that I took, and that is that, their ranges will evolve based on the last 12 months of patients that they've seen. And so, so this is where this whole question of what's optimal really gets challenged, because it's fine if you're going to a lab that only sees healthy people, but we all know that's not the case.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, LabCorp a few years ago changed their testosterone reference range. They moved it down quite a bit because,
everybody's going down
now is much more overweight. It's much more unhealthy. It's much more metabolically, unfit, and much more diabetic, like all the things. And so the normal testosterone range now for men is, like 250 to, 900 or something. Whereas it used to be like 350 to 1200. Like it's moved down a lot to reflect what's happening in the population. So that's a good point.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. No, I mean, Ben, it's just one of the foibles. And I think that's where people like you come into play. It's going to a clinician who has enough experience to say, this is what the reference range says, but here's what I know or what I've seen in my patients, not to mention you're overlaying it with how are you feeling?
Absolutely.
Like, there is that thing where someone can be feeling great at a testosterone level of 500 and somebody else could be dragging themselves at 800.
Yeah.
Understanding what it is that's driving the feeling good or the not feeling good is going to be.
Yeah. I think there's so much we still don't know about these numbers. I've had my hormones checked and I have an interesting situation where I have very, very low cholesterol. I just have like a familial thing where I have super low levels of cholesterol. And so my hormones have always been super low, like all of them, like they're always like off the chart low. But I feel great, and I everything is normal. I have three kids. I didn't have problems getting pregnant. Like, I don't have any hormones.
Look at you. You're down in hormones. Yeah.
But my levels, if you looked at them, you would say, you need to be on hormones. So I think that there's a lot we don't know. That's what's happening at the cell level, the receptor level, the DNA level. Like, there's so much that we don't understand still. So I think your point about asking about how people are feeling is really important.
Well, and then the genetics are important too, right? What your body is doing, what it's optimized. And even then, right? So we know there's these pathways that, you know, take your testosterone, convert it to DHT and whatever the case may be. And even then there's backup pathways that the body has, some which we know about, others which I'm pretty sure we have no clue. Because
absolutely.
You know, that is the amazing thing about the human body is it has so much, it has so many redundancies and protective mechanisms built in. If A doesn't work, then we have B. And if that doesn't work, we've got D and E going on. And I think we just haven't quite cracked that code fully yet. So
I'm not sure we ever will. Like, it's so complex, but don't you love it though? I love the idea that we are so complex that we can't even figure ourselves out.
Yeah, no, I think it's amazing. I think I find that it gives you reason for hope, even with people who are really struggling. And allowing them sometimes, like I have a client recently who has really been struggling with an issue and has been hitting it hard with like multiple practitioners and just becoming more and more run down. And I finally just said to her, you know, why don't you take a break? Mm. Like, why don't you step back and stop doing all this invasive stuff, like just for a month or two? Like, she doesn't have any kind of life-threatening whatever. And she did. And you know, like all of a sudden her energy started to come back. She dropped a few pounds. It's almost like the body was like, oh, thank God, like you could just let me do what I need to do. And it doesn't mean not go back to this stuff because she still has issues to resolve. But sometimes just taking your foot off the gas a little bit, even like I'm sure with the sexual function stuff, I mean, to a point, like all this stuff that you're doing is so important to help people at a mechanistic level kind of address dysfunction. But, you know, have you ever found sometimes saying to someone, you know, well, have you tried getting away?
And right.
Going for a weekend, like a romantic weekend or whatever the case may be, and getting out of your space.
Yeah.
Can also work wonders for.
Well, we know that, like, you know, people who are trying to get pregnant, like, you know, they're having infertility and they're struggling and trying and tracking and doing all the things. And that, you know, that's not when they get pregnant. They get pregnant when they stop and they're like, okay, you know, maybe I'll do something else. And they go on vacation and all of a sudden they're pregnant. So, you know, we know that happens and it makes total sense.
Yeah, no kidding. That's amazing. Anyway, well, yeah. This has been fantastic.
We could talk for hours.
Are you kidding? I'm sitting here going, okay, no, we're not going to go. We'll do a part two someday.
Listeners are like, please stop talking. Please stop talking.
Yeah, we're done. Is there anything else I need to take notes on? No. So, okay. So where can people find you, Amy? And is there anything else you'd like to, that we left out kind of thing? Is there anything we left out? And if not, tell us where to find you.
So the easiest way to find me is on Instagram. I'm very active. I try to post a lot. Try to do some education. It's Dr. Amy B. Killen. And I'm on the other things a little bit, YouTube and things like that, but not as much as Instagram. And I also have a website, which is Amy Killen MD. I have several websites. That's one of them. So look me up and send me a message. And thank you guys so much for listening.
Yeah, no. And you also have clinics in
Park City, Utah, and in like Salt Lake City area, Utah, both in Utah.
Both in Utah. Okay. Amazing. Well, thank you so very much for today. This has been a pleasure. You were as wonderful to interview as I thought you were going to be. So I look forward to chatting with you again soon and also hopefully to meeting you in person someday at some conference when we get back to that business.
Sounds awesome. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natnidham.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.